title of my sermon this morning is The Christian's Ambition. We all have ambitions in life, whether we be people who are in the church or people who are not members of the church. We all have ambitions. And before I get into that, I want to say something. This song we sang this morning, Higher Ground, it reminded me of something. You know, one of the purposes of the gospel is to take the principles that are found within and the resources of God's grace that he's provided in his gospel and to imbibe those into our lives and put us on a higher ground and lift us up higher and higher and higher towards God. That's one of the purposes of the gospel. It's to help us understand that we live for things that are higher than the sordid things of this world that we live in. You see, we live in a world where people are not concerned with spiritual things. They're concerned with material things. They are concerned with this life upon this earth and the fleeting passing things of time that are not real. You see, the Bible makes it plain that we walk by faith. We don't walk by sight. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. That means we take the resources and the principles and the provisions in this gospel, and we use that to look more and more. You see, there's a wall out there whenever we try to look by faith and see God and see spiritual things. And we can't see God with the physical eye. You see, I can't see God with my eye. I can go to you people here this morning, and, well, I don't know if you people's the best words, but you fellow Christians this morning, and shake your hand or say hello, and I don't have any question that you're there. I don't have to ask myself about the reality of you. And you don't have to ask the reality about me because we're there in each other's presence. But we have to use the Bible by faith to look and pierce into that invisible world and to draw us upward and upward and upward towards God and to live above the sin that is in this world, to set us up on a higher ground, as the song reminded me this morning. That's one of the purposes of the gospel. It's not a matter of just, as a habit, opening our Bible each day and getting it in and getting it done to say we've done it. It's a matter of stopping and arresting our attention upon things that God has put within His Word. Things that we can look at and to help us make changes where they're necessary, where they need to be made. And to adjust things in our lives. And we can't just say, well, that's just the way I am. That's just the way, you know, it's just how I am. Is that just the way we are, or is it because we don't want to change? You see, the gospel, the purpose of the gospel of Christ is to change us, to take us the way we are and to change us. You see, if we were okay the way we were, then there would be no need for the gospel. There would be no need for God sending His Son to go down here and live among men and show them the goodness of His humanity as He lived in human form among us and was made flesh and dwelt among us and do the things He did and the virtue and the goodness of Him and to preach and teach people about God, the Father. You know, Philip one time said, I want to see the Father in John chapter 14. And Jesus said, you know, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But there would be no need for God in sending Him and doing all the things He did and giving us the gospel of Christ if we were okay the way we were. You see, God wanted us to take the gospel and look at the way the character of God is and to make us like Him, to make us God-like individuals. That's the purpose of the gospel, to transform our lives, to be more like Him. And we're not going to do it apart from this book right here. This right here is where the wisdom is that we need. Isaiah put it this way in Isaiah 55. He said, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. But as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. We're not going to think God's thoughts and do His ways apart from His book. His thoughts and His ways are in this book. Why were those people not... their thoughts not like His in Isaiah's day? Why were their ways not like God's ways? In a sense, we can't be exactly like God because He is divinity. He is sinless. But the point that Isaiah was making was, you're living a life and you're not basing it on spiritual principles. You're not using God's word to guide your life. And as long as you ignore that word and don't use it in your life, you're not going to be like God. Your thoughts are not going to be like God. Your ways are not going to be His ways. And until they did that, they would still be unlike God and be living and getting further away from Him and what He wants. So the Christian's ambition. Now, the word ambition is not found in the text of the Bible as far as the King James Version. But it is found in three passages as a marginal reading in the American Standard Version. The first is 2 Corinthians 5, verse 9. The second is 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12. And the third is Romans 15, verse 20. So in the marginal reading, it will say ambitious, to be ambitious to do something. And as I said, we all have ambitions. You know, this is something that's common to humanity, whether we're Christians, whether one is a Christian or not. Now, the first principle this morning that I want to look at, if you want to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we're going to be looking at verse 9. The first ambition this morning that we want to look at is to be acceptable to the Lord. You know, whenever Paul was writing to the church at Corinth, he was defending his apostleship against people who claimed that he wasn't. His ambition was not to be pleasing to God. They said, look at that fella. He's just in it for the money. He's low down. He's no good. Trying to destroy the work that Paul had done among these people. He walked into the pagan places and tried to bring the word of life to them. And then people would come along and say that he was a liar and say that he was not what he said he was. But I want you to listen to verse 9, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. I read, wherefore we labor, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. Now the word labor there, that word in the original could very well say be ambitious. We are ambitious, whether absent or present, to be pleasing to the Lord. So this was one of Paul's main ambitions. Now, the word ambition, according to Vine's dictionary, says to be fond of honor and so actuated by this motive, to strive to bring something to pass, hence to be ambitious, to make it one's aim. This is what ambition is. It's pressing towards something. It's trying to accomplish something. This is one of the greatest desires, and it should be, of any Christian, to be pleasing to God. Now, one thing we need to realize is that a Christian does not need to be interested in pleasing himself. If I could take one word and try to sum up what sin is and the essence of sin, and what it really is, and describe it to somebody, I would use the word self. The word self sums it up. Think about it. Anytime that we try to live our life based upon ourself and the selfish wants that we have, without taking into regard other people, not thinking about what other people want, and unmindful of others, does it not always end up in a disaster? I mean, does it always cause problems? I don't know about your experience, but for me it has. You see, the gospel was made to make us mindful of others and to not think about ourselves only, but to think about others. Jesus was not concerned with his own selfish wants when he went to the cross. He was thinking about others. He was thinking about the fact that what sin had done in destroying and all the destruction in this world it could do, it had done, and what it's going to do, and the fact that there needs to be a remedy for it, for other people, based upon his merit and his sinless life, to offer himself as a sacrifice, and he went through that for us. Paul the Apostle, at one time, lived for himself. Listen to what he says in Galatians 1, verse 10. He says, For do I now persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. Now notice he said, for if I yet, if I still please men, in other words, he's saying there was a time when that was my aim, that was my goal. That's what I was concerned with. I was concerned with pleasing men. Now, there's nothing wrong with being pleasing to men so long as it does not displease Christ. That's not what Paul is saying, because there's a sense in which Christians cannot live in the world without pleasing men and having that as a goal on the job or different things like that, so long as it does not displease Christ. But you see, Paul the Apostle was at one time a man named Saul of Tarsus. And his main goal, and he thought that he was pleasing to God and thinking that what he was doing was a favor to God and persecuting the church, threatening to turn upside down his religion he had known from a child and all the Jews had known from the time they had been grown up in this religion, Judaism, but now was being done away with and the church was being established or was established. Paul thought that Christianity was nothing more than a threat to that, to what God wanted. That's what he thought, that God approved, still approved of Judaism. Even after the cross and the preaching of Pentecost, the church is already established, but he refused to accept that. But you see, Christ appeared to him on the Damascus Road and showed him that you need to quit persecuting my people. And so therefore, when he saw the resurrected Christ and understood the implications of that, and the fact that indeed this was God's Son, he changed his life. He no longer lived to please men. The Pharisees and all the different accomplishments. You think about Paul's life as a Pharisee and how far he was up on the ladder of his peers as far as education and accomplishments he had had. And you can read about that in the book of Galatians. But you see, he no longer lived for that whenever he learned the truth. So Christians are to please Christ regardless of what men may say. Because even after Paul changed, you know, I'm sure that the people that he was associated with thought he had gone crazy, because the way that they knew him and the things that he did before, it was a complete change. Paul was simply doing exactly what the gospel says. The gospel helps us to transform our lives. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The gospel is directed to our minds to help transform us. So we see here the fact that one of our ambitions is to be pleasing to God. Now, what could be a better ambition? When you wake up in the morning, and you're going about your business, and you're thinking, you know, what can I accomplish today? You know, simple as getting up, making a cup of coffee, or getting breakfast ready, and getting our clothes on, getting ready to go to work, and getting dressed, and all these different things, and then thinking about who we're going to associate with, and what I can do to better myself on the job, or some hobby I may be doing, something that I'm trying to get accomplished. Of all those things, have you ever thought about putting up on number one at the top of that list to be pleasing to God? If we put that as number one, we will live a fulfilled life. We will be living the abundant life that Jesus promised. Jesus did not come to shut us up and make us narrow down and to cramp us up in life. You know, when life gets too cramped, it's hard to enjoy life. You can't stop and smell the roses. You can't enjoy anything. I think about the example of people over in China where the children, I don't know if they still do this, but there was a practice where they would put shoes on their feet to cramp up their toes so they didn't want their feet to get to grow large. So they would put shoes on there, specialized shoes to help keep their feet small and cramped in. And I use that example just as to help us see that that's what happens to life whenever we refuse to do what the gospel says. It becomes too crowded with things that concerns that we need not be concerned about. things that are not important in the scheme, in the grand scheme of things. We need to be concerned with pleasing God. And when we do that, we will be able to, when that's our number one goal, we'll be living life at its best. As I said in John 10, Jesus said, I've come to give them life and give it to them more abundantly. Surely we're interested in the abundant life, the life that is at its best, the only life worth living. Now, so we've seen the fact in 2 Corinthians 5 that this is the ambition to please God. Now I want to look at some examples of people in the Bible who were pleasing to God. And the first one is in Luke chapter 7. If you want to turn to Luke chapter 7, I want to look at an example here. And this is truly one of those things in the Bible that is unique, and it's truly unusual. And of course, all the Bible is great, and it's a living, active book, Hebrews 4, verse 12. But there are some things that really just jump off the page at you. And this man that we're going to read about here, he was not a Jew. He was somebody who was a Gentile. He was a Roman centurion. He was a soldier working for Rome. In spite of all that was going on at that time in life and the days they were living in with Rome and in control, and the Jews trying to get the Roman rule off their back, you had the impact of Jesus, and what he was doing was so powerful that it reached out to this man who was a Gentile. He was not a Jew. You see, God is not going to allow man to put limits within the gospel of Christ. The gospel is for all. It's for all of us. It doesn't matter your race or your sex, male or female, Jew or Greek. And we're going to see in this example how indeed it really is for everybody. And I'm thankful to God for that, because if I had the idea that I'm saved and I'm in the church and I've obeyed the gospel and I know the blessings of living and being approved of God, and I got the idea that I could look down my nose at other people and, you know, think that I'm something special, that would be dangerous, because nobody could be brought into the church that way if I act that way. Now, Luke chapter 7, we're going to see this example here of someone who is pleasing to God. Luke 7, verse 1, I read, "Now when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of the people, he entered into Capernaum." Excuse me. "And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear unto him, was sick and ready to die. And when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. For he loves our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say unto one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel." You don't find many times where it says Jesus marveled. That means that Jesus was perplexed. I mean, he could not fathom what was going on before him. It was unbelievable. Here he is. He's coming to preached the gospel. He's going into the way of the Jews. He's not going into the way of the Gentiles yet. Although he was slowly but surely making the path for them and associating somewhat with them, he was primarily going to the Jews. He sees the attitude of them that they thought they were superior. The fact that in the Old Testament, you know, God, the purpose in the Old Testament was for them to be the channel of the blessings that come through Abraham. When he said in Genesis 12 that the whole earth would be blessed through his seed. That seed was simply supposed to come through that nation. And they were simply supposed to be a light to other nations round about them to get them to want to worship the one true God. But instead, they thought, well, since we have Abraham's blood in our veins and we have this pedigree and our family can be traced back to him through relatives, we are better than other people. I mean, can you imagine people having that idea? Experiencing the love of God and his grace and mercy and then get that idea? That's what they thought. But you see, here's a Gentile man, and he, being a man of business, understanding how things work, being a man of authority himself, he realized that Jesus was no ordinary man. That this was somebody who was different from other men. It's kind of like what Peter said in 1 Peter 3, verse 15. He said, sanctify the Lord God in your hearts. When he said sanctify, he means to set apart. In your mind, see a difference between Jesus and other people. He is not like other people. It's like when in the Mount of Transfiguration, whenever Peter and John, there was Moses and Elijah and Jesus there, and Peter said, Lord, this is great. Let's make three tabernacles. And God come down from heaven with his voice and said, no, this is my beloved son. You hear him. He's not like other people. As great as Moses was, as great as Elijah was, there's only one man who is ever in the history of this world, who has tread upon the face of this earth, of whom it could be said that he was good. And this man realized that. You see, he knew that Jesus had authority. And he had enough faith to say, just speak the word. I am filthy on the inside. I don't want you to trouble yourself with me. And you know, that's truly the way that we are in God's sight. We are tainted with sin. We live in a world from the time that sin entered the world with Adam and Eve. It has wreaked havoc from that time on down, and it will continue until Jesus comes back. And so, therefore, this man realized his own unworthiness. He realized the holiness and majesty of God. And said, I just want you to speak the word. And he knew, he had faith enough to know that Jesus could do it. So this man had a great faith. So one example of how to be pleasing to God is to have a great faith. How concerned are we with having a great, strong, robust faith, a good, strong faith? That's what we really need to be striving for when we read our Bibles and open our Bibles up. Paul says in Romans chapter 10, verse 17, that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. We're not going to be able to rely upon somebody else's faith or let them have faith for us. We have to be determined to take this book and read it and study it and believe what we believe because we know it's true for ourselves. And that we know that we know that we know that it is true. And until we do that, we will not have a strong, robust faith. We will not be pleasing to God. Is our faith strong enough to take Christ at his word? You know, the gospel has so many different promises in it. And we get to going through life and we sometimes lose sight of those promises and we start doubting and we start slipping up a little bit. We need to be like this Roman centurion and believe that it will be as Jesus said. Jesus said, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. This old earth that we live on one day will be burned up and melted by fervent heat. The extreme heat that will just destroy everything. And it will be gone. But his words will not pass away. The things that he has promised, they are eternal. So we see one example is this man who had a great faith. The next example is in Mark chapter 14 of how to please. We're looking at examples of how to please the Lord. And so love that produces good works. This is one way to please the Lord. You know, this is, if we have the love that the Bible talks about, it will produce fruit in our lives. We'll be able to, people will be able to look at us and say, this is truly a Christian here. It's like, as I mentioned last week, the apostles were preaching the resurrection. They put them in prison. They were right back out there. And the people marveled and took note of these men and said they had been with Jesus. Only the love of God that touches one's life could make him preach the gospel in spite of everything else, no matter if it means dying or not. And that's the kind of love they had. But in Mark chapter 14, we have this account of a woman who comes to Christ with the alabaster box of perfume or ointment. And I'm going to read this. In Mark chapter 14, verse 1, I read, "After 2 days was the feast of the Passover of unleavened bread. And the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death. But they said, no, not on the feast day. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment, of spikenard, very precious, and she brake the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor, and they murmured against her. Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble you her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always, and whensoever you will, you may do them good. But me you have not always. She hath done what she could. She has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this that she hath done shall be spoken of a memorial for her." So we see this woman truly express the love of God. She was so touched by the love of God that she didn't have much, but what she had, she was willing to use and do something. And as I said before, we need to be pleasing to God no matter what everybody else says. She was being criticized by the disciples. And let me just tell you right now, when you decide to do something for God, you're gonna receive criticism. Some people are going to approve and some people are going to disapprove. But if that's going to stop me from doing something, I'll never do anything. Whenever we have it in a mind to do something for the Lord and to better ourselves, to make changes and do things we need to do for God, and we're trying to accomplish something, we need not let what people think hinder us. We need to do it and be faithful. So her love found a way to express itself. Now think what would happen in our lives, in the church, and the good works that would come if we had this kind of love. You know, it'd be a new day in the church. We would see brighter and better days ahead. We would see things change. We would see changes in people's lives. We'd be seeing people's lives being impacted and people in the world being brought in and turned into Christians and transformed into Christians because of our lives and our works and the preaching of the gospel. We would see Christians who need some reviving in their spiritual life. We would see it take place if we had this kind of love. The world would truly be a brighter and better place. Then the next example is of sacrificial giving. In Mark chapter 12, we have what's commonly called the account of the widow's mite. And this is the account of a woman who, she didn't have very much, but the people were casting into the treasury, and she gave all that she had. And I want you to listen to what is said here. Mark chapter 12, verse 41, I read, "And Jesus sat over the treasury and beheld how the people cast money in. Notice what that says. Beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in 2 mites, which makes a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto him, Verily I say unto you, this poor widow hath cast in more than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all she had. The point that Jesus is making is, it's the sacrifice of the people in their lives. Whenever we give to his cause, that's how God values it. If you have a rich man who gives $1,000 and, you know, he's not making very much of a sacrifice, he could either take or leave that money, but you had a poor man who gave all he had, which was $20, in God's eyes, that man that was poor who gave the $20 is greater value than the man who gave $1,000, though he didn't sacrifice much. You see, God doesn't look at things like we do. He wants our lives first, and then he will have our material things. And as I said, Jesus was beholding how. Now, he was an observant. Jesus was an observant person. And he was beholding how the people, the manner in which they were casting their money and engaging in their benevolence. And something caught his eye with this woman. And though they cast in probably, who knows what, how much they were casting in. It could have been thousands. But Jesus said that this woman had truly expressed what he had in mind when it comes to benevolence. And so we've seen these examples, or the fact in 2 Corinthians 5 that one of our ambitions as a Christian is to be pleasing to the Lord. And we've seen these examples.